There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday edition of the show. And easy to get in touch with us. Same as it ever was. Phone number and the text line the same, 343-0106, 343-0106. Maybe you want to put that in your contacts because 7 days a week, 56 hours a week of live local shows here. There's a show you might want to comment on. I have the number handy. Also, if you got the FM Talk 106.5 app, which is cool, and it's free, available for you at the App Store or Google Play, just look for our name. And you stream the station, show schedules, contact the station, all our social media feeds in one place with breaking news. But in addition, you'll see a microphone icon on the bottom of the page. If you press that, lets you record a message, and it emails it here to the station. We can play it back here on the air. So check that out, the FM Talk 106.5 app. Good to get this man in, and it has been, you know, I say this, and I seriously mean it, it has been too long since I've gotten to talk to this guy in person, well, on the radio. Mobile County Probate Judge Mark Irwin, our guest, good to see you.
Good morning. Good to be here.
It's a lot to talk about here in the aftermath of the runoff election. And I've been following your press conferences and all that. And you as a, you're a neutral party here. Explain that to folks.
Well, despite what a lot of people in the public may perceive, under the Alabama system for municipal elections, the probate judge has absolutely no administrative supervisory control over the election administration. But obviously, the probate judge of any county in Alabama is designated as the chief election officer. So naturally, we get a lot of interest, a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails related to municipal elections, not just the city of Mobile, but we have 10 municipalities in the county. 11 in the county. And so while we are not responsible, I feel like I should enter an order that any article or news report that details this information begin with the disclaimer, the probate judge has nothing to do with municipal elections.
Right.
Until we do, frankly.
Until you meet a threshold. Right?
And so what happened was, obviously, I began to receive a lot of communication Tuesday morning very early. And frankly, from people related to both campaigns, not related to any campaign. Information began to flow in fairly early that some type of anomaly was occurring routinely around different precincts in the city. And we kind of got involved in some communication, both with the city and a couple of the, you know, members of each campaign, to just get some background information. I was gathering some information that morning. And as things unfolded, we gave some advice. We provided some backup for the city's election administration to do some things, and we can talk about that in detail. But what I guess I really need the public to understand is that it's a little in the weeds, and you've got to kind of see it as in a bigger picture, but also down into the. So this is what we do. This is the minutiae of running an election, and some things happen in time. I was reminded a little bit, there was at the very end of Apollo 13, there's the little line about, you know, the board that caused the malfunction had been put in place 3 years before the rocket ever went off. These things happen in a chronology that it was a combination of several unrelated factors.
Okay, so more than one thing happened.
Months back, that actually led to what occurred. And I feel like, based on my investigation, and let me just say this, even though it's not my direct responsibility, I felt like for the perception of our election procedures and our election infrastructure in Mobile County, it is incumbent upon me to stand up for that and to explain to the voters that they can have confidence in what we're doing.
So I'm glad you're here, because that's what I mean, that was my feeling here, is just let's get a postmortem, figure out what happened, explain to me
and
how.
And so I began an investigation. I pulled together people from Secretary of State's office, the Board of Registrars, the City of Mobile, my office, all through Wednesday and Thursday, kind of, you know, looking into what were the nuts and bolts here that caused this? How can we explain it? Because I got a little upset, I guess, or disappointed that one of the immediate catchphrases that immediately hit the media Tuesday afternoon was computer glitch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the world we live in, there are elements of the electorate who are very in tune, as you well know, to issues related to electronic voting equipment.
100%.
And electronic voting systems.
Dominate a lot of these texts.
And we
judge.
Need to be sure that we don't just throw around the phrase computer glitch.
Because you came out and said it was not a glitch.
It's not. It's a very, matter of fact, I would say it's less than a glitch. It's actually indicating that systems in our state voter registration system and in our local election infrastructure were working correctly. Unfortunately, they came together to create an anomaly on Tuesday for some voters in Mobile that related to this inactive voter status. And so it's a bit of a story.
Okay.
And people have to kind of stay with it.
Yeah, so
I appreciate the long form opportunity. The Congress in the mid-90s, early 90s passed what we colloquially referred to as the Motor Voter Act.
Yeah.
The MVNRA. Well, the MVRA was an attempt on the federal level to put in safeguards and to basically centralize the voter registration process in each state and to place some procedures that would clear the voter rolls, make sure they're being checked, make sure we didn't have a lot of excess baggage on the voter rolls. I mean, it's an
audit.
It's an audit.
Okay.
And it has a good purpose, and that is to make sure that when we go to vote, people know who you are, that you're in the right location, and that no one else could claim to be you, and that we don't have people who are not eligible to vote on our rolls unnecessarily. So that's the background of the MVRA. Well, that process in Alabama, as it's been adopted by our state legislature to implement in Alabama, kind of pushed down from the federal government, then the states have to implement it. In Alabama, that process takes place every 4 years.
Okay.
So every 4 years, the Secretary of State's office is charged under state law to do a voter database audit.
Okay.
And to do that, they take our data that's maintained in the state voter database, and they compare that data over a series of weeks. And they have, you know, folks that help them do this. But they compare it against other known databases. Under our code, they compare it to the ALEA crime database.
Okay.
They compare it to the Social Security Administration database. They compare it to the U.S. Postal Service change of address database. And they also have it compared to a third-party vendor that they have hired that is a credit bureau database. And so they run an audit against the data of our voters.
Here are the names we have, and we're going to lay those over these other.
We're going to check those against these other to see if we see inconsistencies that may indicate.
Yeah, here's somebody. Here's a Social Security number. That person's dead. Something to that effect.
Social Security says they're dead.
Right.
We need to get them off our voter roll.
Right. Okay.
Or there are inconsistent addresses.
Yeah, they got
some
five addresses.
Some may be out of county. Some may be out of state. But there's inconsistent addresses. Where does this person live?
Okay.
So once the state runs that audit, the procedure then is that they send notifications to any voter who was flagged in that process of auditing. If your voter file hit a flag on any one of those other databases that says there may be an inconsistency here, you are notified by the Secretary of State's office that we've picked up a flag. We need you to reconfirm your current location and reconfirm your voter registration.
Okay.
And you have 90 days to do that.
You get a letter in the mail.
You get a letter in the mail, okay. Postcard, several pieces of correspondence from the Secretary of State's office. And that process began in Alabama back, I want to say March of this year, maybe okay. April, where they began to do the audit.
That four-year cycle.
Four-year audit. Now, fast forward, they've now mailed out these notices. And in the state, I'm told through the Secretary of State's office that flag, that process, flagged about 400,000 individual voter files.
Wow, that's about out of a state of four something million.
I don't have the total registration right now, but if we have 2 million.
Yeah, I'm about to say because we have 4 million something people, so let's say there's 2 million.
So it flags.
That's significant.
It's a significant percentage that get on these cross references. Yeah. Something hit.
Okay.
So they send the correspondence to these 400,000 voters in Alabama back in the spring. Hey, our audit indicates that maybe there's a question about your current residency. Confirm back to us that you still live at the place you're registered.
Okay.
We understand in our conversations with Secretary of State's office, and they were very forthcoming and got involved with us and helping us with this, and I credit them for that. But they indicated that at the end of that process, about half of that number had communicated back to the Secretary of State to confirm their
registration.
About 200,000. Okay. So at that point, you have 90 days, to respond. And at that point, you're given, I think, one more opportunity by a correspondence to correct it.
Right.
Once you've passed that date,
okay,
the Secretary of State takes anyone who has failed to respond without.
So in our case, that 200,000.
That did not respond. And they push a button in the state voter registration that moves those 200,000 files to an inactive status.
Okay.
Now, as the procedure plays out, if you remain inactive for another 4 years and no one here in the Secretary of State hears nothing from you, you don't re-register, you don't show up, at the end of that eight-year process then, four more, then you are subject to being removed from the voter roll.
Okay.
That's the way it works.
Okay. Now, one of the questions here, and I know we're talking about this certain events that led to it, but for this goes in March, and I'm thinking about the case of so many people that texted, but let's talk about Dan Brennan. He had just voted at the same place.
So this
is 4 weeks, not 4 years.
This is where a couple of those perfect storm elements start to come together for me as I investigated it. So when did that happen? Okay, when can we put a peg on the calendar that says the Secretary of State moved these voter files to inactive?
Inactive, right.
It was June 29th.
Okay.
In fact, it was midnight, June 29th. If you look at the timestamp on the voter information, it has a timestamp. And I want the voters to understand that too. When anything is changed in your state voter registration in that database, there's a timestamp put on who did it, when it happened, and what it was. You were disqualified. Maybe they got word that you had a felony conviction. You moved to disqualified. And so someone, an operator somewhere in the system, it timestamps that action. So there's nothing going on that just happens without somebody doing something.
There's a paper trail.
There's a paper trail. Electronic register of what happened. So on June 29th, the Secretary of State pushed that Motor Voter Act update into the system, and those 200,000 voter files move to inactive.
Okay.
Now, why does that not show up in August?
Yeah.
Right? Why did we not have this big uptick in August of people getting noticed?
There's a question.
And let me just say this. We can boil it down to Mobile County and to the city specifically. So out of the 200,000 that we know were part of this net, they got called in the audit, we know that Mobile County, we have just north of 37,000 of that 200,000 were in Mobile County.
Okay. To me, that seems significant.
It's a significant number.
Yeah.
And even boiling that down within the city limits of Mobile, of the 37,000 plus for Mobile County, just over 22,000 of those are registered in the city of Mobile.
Wow. Okay.
So that's our pool of potential problems that were moved to inactive. Now, I had to dig into this because I knew the timing didn't sound right
to
me.
So they should have been flagged in August, right?
We had an August 26th election. So now that gets us to the city side of this and the city working through their pre-election procedures. So as everyone knows, since 2020, both in county elections and the last two elections for the city of Mobile, we've employed the iPad electronic poll books.
The 10X system.
The 10X system.
Okay.
And I will say that it's been rock solid system for us in each county election that we've run with them since 2020. And because this involved the 10X system and they were being prominently mentioned in some of the stories coming out of Tuesday, I felt, again, compelled, not just for the integrity of our total system, but also the integrity of our county elections using 10X. I want to make sure the public is comfortable and confident in this system. So I felt that was kind of a second reason I felt like I needed to get involved personally. So when you begin to prepare for the election, the city, in this case, has to pull the expected voter database that they intend, you know, that are now registered for City of Mobile, and they send that to 10X ahead of time, and they begin to work on populating the units that are going to be used in August.
Okay.
And also testing it and doing some things to make sure
so
the downloads.
Like, yeah, that's what I was wondering.
There's a process that occurs well before the election.
Okay.
That download just didn't happen the second week of August.
Okay.
It actually happened, and this is kind of where the coincidence occurs. We know that the first load of data for the City of Mobile's election was moved to 10X June the 20th.
Before that,
9 days before
the
state
29th.
Did the update.
Okay.
So now that data is loaded into the iPads. It's starting to be loaded
because
tested.
But we still hadn't gotten the update on the audit.
We don't go back and pull another full draw of data.
Okay.
So 29th comes, that data's changed, but we never go back in and pull the full load of data and reload the 10X after the 29th. We loaded it before, or I say we. I'm saying the collective we, just so it's the City of Mobile, which we are all affected by. Now, that database is changed a little bit as the election approaches because voter registration is still open until 14 days before the election. And so those incremental changes in voter registration, updates, new registrants, they get fed to 10X for uploading into the database.
They're added to.
But they're not. They don't pull a whole brand new database and start loading the iPads again. So these supplemental updates for absentee ballot requests, they have to be uploaded. So that information is, piecemeal being fed to 10X over the weeks leading up to the election. And then, of course, voter registration shuts down 14 days before the election. And then absentee ballot ends.
But still there's this fact that it was uploaded, to 10X on the 20th of June, and we still hadn't got – there's this –
But this new information was injected into the statewide system that we didn't pull out. The city didn't pull out again, right? So people show up on the 26th of August.
Can you hold on to that?
Yeah, we
come right back. Come right back after the news. More with Mobile County Probate Judge Mark Irwin.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:25, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. All right, to continue our conversation with Mobile County Probate Judge Mark Irwin. So we talked about these things, and that's interesting. The 20th and 29th of June are pretty pivotal here in this discussion.
They are.
Which is like most of us, I had no idea that was going on,
Right.
So here we go. We show up on August 26th, you said.
And the key for me is that explains how voters could show up on the 26th of August, not have any issue with their status, but then show up in September and be Dan Brennan, right? Shows up and has an inactive flag at that point. So because
even though it's odd, though, he said he voted in his other.
Right.
There may be some other anomaly.
Well, I'm going to talk about. Yeah. So that's an issue, too, because what in the audit was flagged may have. It really wasn't about whether you had voted in the past. It's about something related to your address. Typically. So 26 comes and goes. There's not really a huge uptick in this inactive issue because the data the city had on the iPads had actually been pulled before the Secretary of State did their standard update on the 29th.
Okay.
So that helps me explain why we didn't see it in August. Then I also need to address that there was a separate issue with the configuration of the workflow on the iPads.
Okay, explain to that in Sullivanese. Okay. Put it in some Superman language here.
If you are inactive and you are a registered voter, but you're on the inactive list,
okay,
and you show up at the poll on election day, you are not, under state law, required to vote a provisional ballot.
Yeah, that was the thing you're supposed to be
the
given.
The procedure is that you do what's we call a short form update, a re-identification form. It's a standard
card. The thing that maybe the letter that went out
would have been asking you to do.
Okay.
You do that update at the poll.
And then
they give you a regular ballot that goes in the normal
calculator.
Right,
so I heard you talk about this. So
you do not have to do a provisional ballot. However, again, City of Mobile, they do this once every 4 years, perhaps maybe not as immersed in some of this technical, you know, mm-hmm. procedure. They did not have 10X configure the iPads to allow for the inactive administrative override to allow a check-in of that voter after they completed the update. It said you must
How do you go do that? I mean, is that something 10X does, or do you have to go through and click a box?
It's 10X is working over all sorts of jurisdictions.
Well, sure, what I'm saying is
they're having to update it based on what the city's asking them to do. And I don't know if that issue was not addressed.
But that was the thing that it wouldn't come with the regular package, whatever, from 10X. You would have to say, hey, by the way, I want this feature.
Right. And In state, federal, and county elections, we have a procedure in 10X where if you present inactive at the poll, then you are referred over to the election official, the either inspector or the chief clerk or your poll. You do that short update. They can override the inactive status to check you in and issue you a regular ballot.
Okay.
That's what should have happened. But early in the morning, that was not happening. So Dan Brennan gets told, you got to do a provisional ballot because the 10X unit was telling the poll worker that's what
happened. This is your only option.
That's the only option. I can't override it to check you in normally. So early in the morning, when I realized, had gotten information that was going on, I actually sort of stepped in, got my IT director, who's very familiar with this process as we do it for county elections. She worked with 10X. And with the city, and sort of coordinated a push out of an update to the workflow.
That says, yes, you can let them do this.
You can override the inactive and vote a regular ballot. So about 9:45, the information I got.
So that's the update we keep hearing about.
Yes, about 9:45 that morning, they pushed that out. And we understand from that point forward, the inspectors could have overridden an inactive flag and provided that voter a regular ballot, avoiding the provisional situation.
All right, come back a few more minutes. Can you hang out with us?
Sure.
Coming right back with, he is the neutral party looking at it.
Mobile County. Not my job.
That's right.
But it is my job.
Yeah, Mobile County Probate Judge Mark Irwin, our guest.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Appreciate the judge hanging out with us for one more segment here and just talk about what happened. And this is interesting. So you said it has been a series of different things that came together to lead to what happened on the runoff day. And that one, to me, is really interesting, too, if we want to have our radar up to look for things that when, because go back, you said, so the state does this, Secretary of State's office comes in June 29th, but we uploaded on June 20th.
That's right. That's correct.
Seems like, I don't know, I talk about stuff maybe in overly simplistic terms because maybe there's a note on the calendar that says, hey, don't do this until the state does that.
Like, well, what's interesting is that this is the first, this kind of catches these municipal elections in this new cycle that they've been put in that traditionally they have not been in.
Right.
So that, although City Mobile's has been a bit of an off cycle from the rest of the state on even years, but the whole state, they changed the election code 4 years ago to put the municipal elections intentionally on an odd year to keep them out of mm-hmm. the regular election cycle, particularly the presidential election cycle. So that's a positive. But every 4 years, this MVRA process is going to be going on in the spring ahead of every municipal election in the state.
And but, Judge, am I being simplistic and just saying put a note on the calendar there, say we don't upload until they do?
I think that's probably certainly going to be going forward.
Yeah.
You know, let's make a lesson here that we understand when the Secretary of State does that, we know when it's going to happen, and that we don't do anything with data until we know the state has done the MVRA.
Yeah, y'all done your stuff? Okay, y'all stuff is all in.
I think that's a lesson that's going to be taken from this, and I have a pretty strong suspicion it'll be followed that way going forward. I don't see why you wouldn't have that as part of your just checklist.
Yeah, I'm looking at different texts here. I can't get to all of them, but Michael said, none of the coincidence we're talking about still explain why a voter like me, who hasn't missed a primary election or a runoff in 23 straight years, was classified as inactive.
Okay, well, let me talk about that, because that gets back out of Mobile to this MVRA audit, okay? And now, as I appreciate it, against the different databases that the Secretary of State audits the voter files on, if, like I said, they're really looking for inconsistencies in addresses. You know, if it appears that you have an address that's no longer in the county where you're registered or even in the state. Now, there's been some discussion already about this this credit bureau database that they use as a third-party check in this process, in addition to other databases.
You said Social Security.
ALEA, the Postal Service name change or address change database, and this Experian
credit bureau. Okay,
what could happen, and may have happened to some people we know in Mobile, is if you own a piece of property in another county or another state, and perhaps there's a note on that you pay, that credit check database may have thrown a flag that there's a newer address here than the one you're registered in.
But even though it's not your residence.
Not your residence, but it's just another address where you own property.
Okay.
Or perhaps you have an adult child who lives across the state line or lives in Nashville and you co-signed a note with them there. You show up as a creditor or as a person who has some credit on a piece of property in Nashville or a condo in Nashville. Yeah. Do you live in Nashville? The computer's just looking at inconsistent addresses. Is this your residence or is Mobile still your residence? So I think some of those things were throwing flags, had nothing to do with your voter pattern, had nothing to do with how many times you had voted in a election at the address you were registered at. It had to do with, did the systems they were auditing against see inconsistent addresses and information about you, your name, your family.
I wonder if the credit bureau one is enough of a benefit to keep it, because there seems like there's some detriment.
That is a decision that I think, you know, is above me, that needs to be made in Montgomery to decide if in these 4-year cycles of this audit process, if that is, you know, consistent enough to help.
Right.
Is it really helping or is it hurting?
Right. I don't know.
So
I'm just sitting here.
To the texter, I would suggest, and I don't have any idea, I know this, but it may be that certain people that had that problem on Tuesday last week may have their name in a credit situation that's at least a hit on this credit bureau
that's not
database
here. That's not.
That just says it's not Mobile County.
Not Mobile in this one,
not
specifically.
Mobile. Yeah.
The texter said, after the August election, so the 26th, did the June 29th updated information get sent to 10X?
Yes.
Okay.
Ahead of the runoff, a new database was pulled to populate the iPads for the runoff. Therefore, it caught the June 29th update.
See, they were not caught going into August 26th, but the update happened in between.
They did get picked up for the September 23rd. And that created the hey, I voted in August with no problem. Now I'm inactive. That was the reason that occurred, as best I can tell, in what I've been able to investigate.
And I do follow. There's, you know, two things going on. There's that initial thing, and then there's, oh, there is a remedy for this. If that be simplified, you click the button for the hey, let's be able to do the. You don't.
Right.
You have a provisional. You
right.
go. You, they.
If
they reset
been,
where
if
you live.
If this had been a county election in any primary, runoff, or general election next year, if you were an inactive voter for whatever reason you were inactive, if you were tagged inactive, you would simply have been sent over to the chief clerk, the second person at the poll, and they would have gotten you to do the 4-line address update form to confirm you were still living at the same location, registered in that precinct. And they would have clicked you in and checked you in on the iPad and handed you a slip to go get your regular ballot. And you would have voted it, put it in the machine, and walked out. And that process, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, maybe just a little delay. The provisional process is a little bit more of a delay just because there's a little bit more paperwork.
Dan was talking about, he felt like he was taking a test.
You have to fill out a form and there's, you know, you have to check a lot of boxes. And I appreciate the frustration the voters who were put in that position felt. But let me hasten to say this, Sean, for everyone listening, even if you went through the provisional process, Dan Brennan went through the provisional process, thankfully, the end result would still be that vote being counted. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that has just been completed downtown, as I appreciate it. Noon on the Tuesday following the election is the provisional canvas. All of those that went through that process are accepted. They get that report. Those are added to the total. So as of right now, we should have the final totals here.
Counting shortly. All the provisionals.
And so all the provisionals have been counted. And so just for the sake of peace of mind of the voters, if you did do a provisional throughout this little, you know, series of events, you were inactive and you were forced to do a provisional, I am confident that if you completed that process, your vote has now counted for mayor and you were on record as having participated in the election. And I think that is at least some comfort that it wasn't an insurmountable hurdle to a voter to get to vote if they were inactive for that first few hours of the morning.
Yeah, I think Aiden from Citronelle texting in, this may go back to what you're saying, said, would this have happened if we had a statewide election running at the same time as municipal elections like we used to? Probably wouldn't, because you said that button was clicked on the...
Yeah, anyway. One of those things would not have happened because we were running a statewide election. Our system would have been at the county. We would have configured our system to have allowed for the override. So the issue of the provisional would be off the table.
Okay, the other issue.
The other issue, it would have been when did we pull the data to populate the iPads versus when the state, you know, did the update. I feel like we would have, at the county level, we would have done some testing, pre-election testing of the database. We run through a series of scenarios with that data, with 10X, to make sure that we're confident that it's been downloaded correctly, that there doesn't appear to be any corruption in the download. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes that stuff happens and you run a few scripts through it and you find that there's some things that don't make sense. You've lost, you know, your numbers don't match. Number of voters you expect to be registered aren't, somehow it's off. We run that again. We want to pull that data down and make sure we've tested it ahead of the election and that we're confident that we have a full set of voters in each precinct that are properly registered and are active.
Okay. I mean, before we wrap up here, I'm going to give you a big heavy-duty telescope, spot and scope. Judge, you're going to look forward 4 years.
Yeah.
Are we here again? Are we?
No, I think we'll be helping the city, whatever role we can help in. I'm sure the Secretary of State's office will be doing the same and ensuring that all the municipalities across the state, particularly any that use an electronic poll book system, and I'm not sure how many other cities actually do that. Mobile should be applauded, frankly, for doing that. They don't have to. You could still walk in and you'd have to go through the phone book, paper book, and find your name, and somebody'd have to check you off and the time it would take to wait in line to do that. That process has been sped up so much with these electronic poll books, and they are accurate. And they were accurate, frankly, last Tuesday. People were inactive for whatever reason, and I don't want to speculate on why one person may have been and one person may not have been. That's really a state audit issue, frankly.
Yep, that's nice.
But I feel confident about net 4 years from now, these things will be built into the pre-election process and they can be accounted for and avoided. At least we don't have this unexpected anomaly. Now, that's to say, Sean, there may be something else because elections have a fog of war about them that Election Day just creates because of so many moving pieces. And it takes a lot to manage that. But you can trust that to the extent I have anything to do with it, my staff has anything to do with it for state and county elections, we do everything we can to manage that controlled chaos of an election day at 80 different locations around our county and make sure the voter has a chance to vote and have their vote counted.
Judge, thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Anytime, Sean.
Coming right back, April Marie Fogle joins us.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And good to check in with our friend April Marie Fogle, guest host in residence around here. Also, you read her work at 1819 News, fighting the wars against chipmunks and raccoons and all kind of critters around her house up in Birmingham. And she still has time to talk to us. Thanks for your time.
Got a blind possum now. Although I'm confused.
Which is the name of a blues artist, right? A blind possum. That's pretty cool.
Are they all blind, or do they just look that way if you see them?
They're not blind. No. I mean, they got eyes. They use eyes.
This thing looks blind. Like, I got a photo of him. He looks, I don't know.
Well, the daylight, it hurts his eyes. I mean, because he's got eyes tuned up for nighttime. That may be it. It's a little too bright. A little too bright.
Yeah. It's a whole stitch.
Well,
how's it going?
I think it's good. It's good, and it's probably better on this end than maybe for you. So I'm reading Jeff's story yesterday over at 1819 News, and it's I see the headline, the F-bomb Charlie Kirk, BLM activist Carlos Chavez Jr. sends threatening email to 1819 News reporter. I'm like, oh, goodness. I read down there, and I'm like, oh, that was sent to April Marie. This is quite a thing here, huh?
So this guy...
Who is this guy? Help educate us down here. Who is this?
Let me give you some background on this guy. This guy is a would-be wannabe, you know those like the equivalents of ambulance chasers, but for racial issues.
Sure.
We all know them. We've seen them around. They go around the country and exploit the families of those who have died, which is, by the way, every death a tragedy. But they specifically exploit the death of those related to law enforcement. And he really made a name for himself doing just that, causing these really disruptive protests in Hoover after the shooting at the Galleria, which law enforcement was cleared of all wrongdoing. But that didn't stop him from blocking traffic and causing scenes and doing all these things. He got into some fights, public fights with Randall Woodfin in Birmingham.
Verbal fights, not fisticuffs. Okay.
Verbal fights. He has a history of threatening people, menacingly. You know, we're gonna go to the home of law enforcement officers. We're gonna go to the homes of elected officials. He's just a bully. And he took issue with a story that I wrote last week. And the short version of the story was there was a woman who took it upon herself to go after the pastor of Church of Highlands for having the nerve to exercise his First Amendment rights and like some of Charlie Kirk's tweets five years ago or so. And I saw her name in an AL.com story, went to her page, and here she is reposting hateful things about Charlie Kirk. This is a woman who caused all sorts of trouble for low-income families in Birmingham by her outing Chris Hodges, getting cancel culture at its height to cancel him. And now she's posting these, you know, disrespectful posts. And so I did a story on it, and Carlos got mad. And so I've spent the last couple of days being called every name in the book because I have the nerve to share what some of these people are doing.
Wait a second. So you just let people know what the person did, and that makes you, I mean, if y'all read through the story, you'll see not very nice language here.
No. And here's the thing. I told Jeff, I said, this is going to be shared by people who support him and the people who just generally dislike me because I'm so disagreeable at times. He called me mean names, which, by the way, happens all the time. The next story I did was on a queer, let's see if I can get this right, radicalized queer, I don't think it was in the headline, but gay Muslim Canadian man that the University of Alabama brought to Alabama on and gave a teaching position and for a PhD. I did a story on him, and those two hit at the same time, my story and Jeff's story on this guy sending me this nasty email. And then the leftists just lost their minds on me yesterday.
This one, by the way, the story you have about Raheem Thaler, I don't know how you can get that all on your business card. That's a lot. instead of just saying, hey, I'm a professor, all these different, you know, specific, I guess, protected classes or something like that. What is Thaler, what is he teaching? At Alabama?
This is the epitome of a DEI hire. He checks all the boxes. But here's what's, and I got really,
but maybe
I almost,
he's good at, well, maybe it's an important class. Maybe it's an important class. So, I mean, as long as they're teaching an important class, what class is he teaching?
He is teaching in the School of Social Work. And he is, he's an instructor over at the School of Social Work. And if you look at, in my story, I did a deep dive into this guy. I can't unsee the images of him naked. He posted images of himself nude, except for some pearl-covered cloth. And that is unfortunately etched into my brain. But this guy posted on Medium just last week about some coursework he's doing. And then it basically tells the kids, capitalism is wrong, Marxism good, basically United States is essentially teaching, this Canadian came here, brought here by University of Alabama, seemingly teaching the kids everything they know in life is wrong, the American way is wrong.
So this is who the University of Alabama thought was the right person for the, was the course there and they got this person to teach the course, or they get this person, the course came with them? Like,
so this guy this guy posted, so if you go to my story on 1819 News, and I believe it's still trending, if you go to the story, you can see this guy's acceptance letter. He was at a university in Toronto teaching all DEI related things, all the things we have outlawed here in Alabama, all the things President Trump has said is divisive to our country, unnecessary and wrong, right? It's study after study shows this. This isn't a political thing. And this guy was doing that. Here's what made my blood boil and should make everyone's blood boil. This, out of 188 applicants to the School of Social Work, and this is a Doctor of Social Work program. He was one of 20 accepted.
So 20.
You, one of 20 out of 188 applicants, and they knew he had posted about his inability to be a good fit for what he calls Zionist. He's very anti-Zionist, which, by the way, is just anti-Jewish and anti-people who support Israel. He's very openly cheered for and after the death of the Hamas leader who is suspected of organizing October 7th massacre, he posted something honoring that guy. And the university thought, we have 20 limited spots for this program. Let's bring in a Hamas-supporting, DEI-loving, queer Muslim.
Who makes that decision there at the school? Who is the, so, is it a board or something?
There is an admissions process for these programs. And I say this, if they accepted 20 people, and this is one of 20 out of 188, that shows a failure, an absolute, utter, and complete failure. And those people should be removed from accepting anybody again. They should have no part in the process. If you are bringing in a terrorist group sympathizer, then you have lost all ability to discern who should be here and who should not, and the university needs to do something about this. But instead, crickets. Not a freaking word from them.
Wow. This is probably unknown to most people who are cutting a check to the university.
I would hope that everyone who reads the story and everyone who's listening to this interview, take if you're listening and haven't seen the story, take the time to go look at it and then contact the university, because these instructors have the ability to do is influence who goes into our communities and where they are. The people with these social work degrees are working with kids, they're working with adolescents, teenagers, they're working with our most at risk. And if you've got someone teaching them, then who fundamentally disagrees with our country, and fundamentally, here's the thing: is your identity is your identity. Whatever your mental illness you want to live, go ahead and live it. But do not making that the center of who you are, and then bringing that to a university and making that a part of what the students around you have to experience. It's not right.
Wow. Yeah, y'all check these out. I mean, all April Marie stories, but these right now, yeah, I think trending is probably the not the right word for it. It's going way more than trending out there. So y'all check them out. And April Marie, if they want to reach out to you directly on social media, how do they do that?
APRYLMARIE on X. And hopefully you or Jeff take a vacation day in the next couple of weeks so that I can come on and have 3 hours to discuss this stuff.
Get ready for a text because I got a big event coming up. So month of October.
All right.
Yeah, there's going to be a big absence. So I'll give you some dates on that coming up. We could probably do that. Yeah, later this afternoon. I'll send you a text. Or we can do it right here on the air, but it's going to be mid-October. All right?
I love it. I'll be there.
All right, good stuff. Thank you. There she goes, April Marie Fogel. And check those stories out over at 1819news.com. Come back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. Got my friends from Coastal HR in. It's that time of year. What time? No, not Halloween. We'll talk about this time of year and what you need to be thinking of and doing with Colleen from Coastal HR when we come back.